KIOS-FM presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 20th, 2003, for broadcast at this time. Today's guest speaker will be United States Navy Captain James C. Taylor, Chief of Public Affairs for U.S. STRATCOM at Offutt Air Force Base. He'll talk about just what STRATCOM is, what makes it different from its predecessor SAC, what the role of STRATCOM is in its new mission, and why it is an important neighbor in America's heartland. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Dale Munson, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omaha Press Club Noon Forum. I'm Dale Munson, a member of the OPC Education Committee. Following the aerial strike on Baghdad last night, and with troop movement into Iraq imminent, it is very pertinent that we have this opportunity to become better acquainted with our military neighbors at Offutt Air Force Base. For over four decades, Offutt has been the home of what was known as SAC, Strategic Air Command. But in recent years, that organization has evolved into what we now know as STRATCOM. What makes the United States Strategic Command different from its predecessor? What is the role of STRATCOM in its new mission? What effect will the influx of new responsibilities and personnel from a sister base in Colorado have on STRATCOM, and what impact on the Omaha community? Our guest will have the answers to these and many other questions that will be submitted by our audience. U.S. Navy Captain James C. Taylor is Chief of Public Affairs, U.S. STRATCOM. Captain Taylor is a graduate of Oklahoma State University and holds a master's degree in educational psychology from Kansas State. Captain Taylor's assignments on land and sea have taken him from Hollywood, California, to Dhahran, Saudi Arabia, and nearly a dozen points in between, including that of military censor during the first Gulf conflict. Captain Taylor is very active in his church and enjoys a wide variety of outdoor recreation and education. The Taylors, his wife Renee, and children Katie, Madison, and Casey have been in the Offutt assignment since the year 2000. And it's my pleasure to welcome Captain James C. Taylor.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, for the cameras, I'll get your statement so then we can keep moving on other stuff here, because I know that's what you're going to want associated with this, since I've been doing this for 22 years. So first and foremost, I want to say thank you very much for that great introduction. I hope I can live up to that for you. United States Strategic Command. I'll give you a quote here. Am I ready? Okay. U.S. Strategic Command is actively engaged in this operation. U.S. STRATCOM is a resource and information provider. We are providing direct support to our forces deployed in this effort by bringing together intelligence, strike planning, space support, and information capabilities. By gathering valuable information for our troops, U.S. STRATCOM is part of a key reach-back system that allows commanders to rely on experts and specialists without deploying military members overseas. In short, we can provide from America's heartland the information materials necessary so operators can rigorously plan and responsively execute the mission as has been directed by the President and the Secretary of Defense. End of statement. Today is a very interesting day. We've had a chance to watch television within the last hour and 12 minutes. If you go back and watch TV, you'll see where operations have begun with regards to the ground forces, the air forces, and the forces at sea. I was fortunate in having an opportunity to have served over there during Desert Shield and Desert Storm. The experience was very eye-opening for me, as I know it will be for many of you, particularly taking the time to watch it on television. First and foremost, I wanted to state for me personally and my family how wonderful it is to be stationed here. Of all the assignments that I've had in my 22 years thus far, this is the best. This is going to be the hardest assignment, I will have to leave. And it's because of the people here. And I thank you. I have handed out a fact file. So for the reporters that are working stories, deadlines, and specific copy space here, you'll be able to use that accordingly. So with this fact file, I give you our mission statement that states specifically who we are, an overview of what the command is, the global focus associated with this command structure as it has come together and has its commander, Admiral Jim Ellis, stated on several occasions here in the community. It talks about the intelligence gathering process and processing, space as it relates to the merger with regards to U.S. Space Command merging with U.S. Strategic Command that took place 1 October of last year, that is to be completed on or about or before 1 October of this year. Also with regards to four previously unassigned mission areas, that as of 10 January, the President, through the direction, through this discussion with the Secretary of Defense, assigned these four previously unassigned missions to STRATCOM as well. So you can see our job has gotten exponentially bigger. Those missions in themselves are Global Strike, which is the ability to rapidly plan and deliver limited duration and extended range precision effects at the direction of the President and the Secretary of Defense. Integrated Missile Defense, which is STRATCOM's responsibility to plan, integrate, and coordinate global missile defense operations and to serve as the focal point for desired integrated missile defense characteristics and capabilities, including their support systems. Again, integration and coordination. Integrated Information Operations, that is, U.S. STRATCOM is responsible for integrating and coordinating Department of Defense information operations that cross geographic areas of responsibility across the core I.O. or information operation capabilities, that the core I.O. capabilities are computer network defense, computer network attack, electronic warfare, operation security, military psychological operations, otherwise known as PSYOPs, and military deception, or known as MILDEC. And then the acronym of all acronyms, if it will, some of you may deal with that in business. Those in the military and those that haven't served in the military understand the importance of acronyms. One that is no less important is C4ISR, which is Command and Control, Computers, Communications, Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance. That is, STRATCOM's responsibility is to plan, integrate, and coordinate these functions. These functions that enable strategic operations. So you see from the creation of Fort Crook back in the 1800s to later being renamed Offutt Airfield, representative of a Native son who lost his life during World War I in what was thought to be the war to end all wars. Then in World War II, the Martin Bomber Plant. Many of you may not know, as far as the Martin bombers, in fact, they built 1,500 there. They built 500 B-29s, two of which are known as Enola Gay and Boxcar. The Offutt Field House is the location where they modified each of those. And then follow on to that, under the direction and forward thinking of General Curtis LeMay, that created, before the Department of Air Force was created, Strategic Air Command. First came in inception back at Andrews Air Field, back in Maryland, and then moved it here. Then the thought process was relevant to the technologies of the time, not thinking that any of technologies would be able to reach this part of the world, this part of the country. And with that, for many years, the aspect of strategic deterrence, as we have seen through history. Then with the fall of the Berlin Wall, the dissolution of the Soviet Union, we have seen significant changes at the command itself. Then, through a series of policy statements, the Nuclear Posture Review, the quarterly defense review, and at the same time, an important element of those is called the Unified Command Plan. If you had a chance, an opportunity to listen to Admiral Ellis, I highly recommend you get a chance to do that. We've had several occasions there. We haven't had much media coverage when he's spoken, but he's had the opportunity to be able to brief the community, leadership, as well as local social organizations here, as far as what this is all about. The new U.S. Strategic Command, as it is called, is a function of the merger of U.S. Space Command and U.S. Strategic Command back in October of last year. It improves the military's ability to respond to the needs of the president. That is, STRATCOM now provides a single commander, that is Admiral Ellis, who is currently the commander of United States Strategic Command, with a global perspective to support the president. It will enable better intelligence collection, assessment, and planning, thereby improving the situational awareness required for strategic decision-making by the President and the Secretary of Defense. The new U.S. Strategic Command will improve operational effectiveness and combat capabilities and unity of command for the U.S. military, in that technology has expanded faster than our doctrine for its employment, resulting in some overlap in the missions performed by STRATCOM and the former SpaceCOM. You saw from Desert Shield and Desert Storm, the precision-guided weapons that were used then was about 7% of the weapons employed. Now you're going to see of the weapons being employed here greater than 70%. So over that 10-year span, how that percentage has increased. That's how important space is to the warfighter. The new command will eliminate many of the organizational seams stemming from the current division of labor, that is, regional combatant commanders, those such as U.S. Central Command, increasingly request support from both, in this case, historically U.S. Space Command and U.S. Strategic Command. So now the U.S. Strategic Command will provide, if you will, one-stop shopping for a range of specialized capabilities and expertise and improve warfighting effectiveness for the regional commanders. The new U.S. Strategic Command represents the type of transformational change called for by the Quadrennial Defense Review and Nuclear Posture Review that will help us face new threats in the 21st century. That is, to defend America, its friends and allies, while dissuading and defeating adversaries. The U.S. military is changing. It is changing in that the U.S. military is about more than just changing technology. It is about changing, adapting organizations, training, and doctrine to emerging threats and emerging technologies to counter those threats. The emergence of these transnational global threats, that is, state and non-state actors such as terrorist organizations and those that operate across state borders, increasingly in affiliation with others who oppose U.S. interests, requires a more integrated approach to our nation's defense. The new U.S. Strategic Command is an important step toward improving our nation's security in the 21st century. I have stated to you with regards to global strike, integrated missile defense, information operations, and C4ISR, this is what U.S. Strategic Command is. As was stated earlier with regards to Strategic Air Command, its legacy is very important to this nation's military. But so much has changed now at Offutt. The 55th Wing is our host. The 55th Wing has been there for many years. It will continue to be there. With the support of the community, with the support of the state, with the support of the nation, we'll continue to fulfill our obligations to you, the taxpayers. With that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
So, Gary, if you would collect questions and bring them forward. First of all, Captain Taylor, did you get any sleep last night?
A couple of hours. Next question. Yes, it is.
This is unrelated, but it's something that we discussed at a previous committee meeting. And it is based on some news stories in the past half year on the outsourcing of certain services at Offutt Air Force Base. Can you save money? Can the military save money by outsourcing, or is this primarily to relieve military personnel for more important duties?
Well, the question itself is something that is more applicable to our host rather than myself. I am going to avoid that question, if you will, only because that is a Air Force policy statement, because it is an Air Force base. Practically thinking, you would imagine there would be savings with that. Historically, the savings that have taken place, there may be an adjustment period associated with it. But overall, that is something that must be done because of the change of the military in itself. That is part of change.
I'm going to tackle the this long question first of all, and we'll see what happens here. And this is in quotes, the, quote, peace, unquote, demonstrators were conspicuously silent for the past 8 years, even though Clinton sent combat troops overseas more than a dozen times, including the bombing of Iraq in 1998. Since it appears that they are only interested in demonstrating against Republicans, does the military or anyone really take them seriously?
Is that a question or a statement?
This, I think, is a question, but it does sound like you can.
Well, like a statement. My comment to that would be, isn't it great we live in this country that folks can do that?
Roughly how many civilians work with STRATCOM through contractors with offices in the Bellevue, Omaha area?
With STRATCOM in itself, contractors, that number is changing all the time as a function of the merging of U.S. Space and U.S. Strategic Command. The number is not final. It is growing. As has been stated previously, they expect somewhere around 500 new jobs to be coming to STRATCOM that will affect the local economy. So this is a benefit to everyone. And with that, the families, contractors, part of that is their civilian jobs as well.
Can you give us more information on psychological warfare?
No.
Can you give us any insight into your duties 12 years ago as a military censor?
It worked. No, excuse me. Okay, I'll step away from the mic and answer that one. Basically, for myself, my experience associated with that, it was an aspect of change associated with the perspective of the military. It was an aspect associated with what type of information needs to be known here in the States. What type of information is important to the audience? It was a process of which was vetted through the civilian leadership of the military, and it was a plan that was presented to them at that time as to an effort to be able to provide information back to the public, at the same time putting media there with the forces where they were operating. And as you see now how that process has matured, where you see now, and if you did not know this, there's more than 600 media embedded with the U.S. and allied forces in that theater of operations, more than 600. So, yes, it is a very interesting time.
Did then or does now the military censorship include censoring letters from the troops home?
Well, I really don't like using the word censorship. Okay? It is a challenge because basically there are two elements associated with security at the source, and that is that we're protecting the men and women that are carrying out the operations, so we're not providing information which may put them in harm's way. More importantly, that some people may refer back to World War II as a process of screening letters and the like. We are in the electronic age. It's a matter of typing a note and hitting the enter key and it's gone. It is responsibility on both sides. It's a means of communicating back and forth. It's the immediacy of sharing of information. So it is a mutually agreed upon. It's part of the ground rules associated with the media embedded with the military, and it is something that will continue to mature over time. Positively.
late, I believe.
I don't know if you can answer this or not. What is the role of STRATCOM in Operation Iraq Freedom?
Go to the fact sheet. My statement earlier, that's what I had stated, what our role is. So that's it. Okay? That's as far as I'll go with regards to that.
It's understandable. Here's a personal question. Where were you and what was your job on September 11th of 2001?
We were in the middle of our annual nuclear assurance exercise. No, I'm not going to talk about anything. Like, just give you my phone here. I know you want me talking to Mike. We, in fact, were in the middle of our annual exercise. During that time, we had a lull, if you will, in our exercise window. There's an organization called the Buffett Classic. There were representatives in the community that asked to come out and visit. They were coming out to the club that day. They had a breakfast they paid for themselves, and then they were going to tour the building. But during that process, the events took place that we all know so well with regards to Tower 1, Tower 2, Pentagon, and the flight in Pennsylvania. They did not get a tour. They had to proceed on, but there were several people on the bus. In fact, they had their livelihood in the World Trade Center. We then went into a posture. Basically, we secured the exercise, we terminated it, and we went into real-world circumstance. We were given a heads-up that the president might come, a function where he was earlier that day in Florida, then to Louisiana, and then indications were that he may be coming here. We were given about 20 minutes notice. He arrived. He came into the building, received a briefing. Most of you in the media have already been through this briefing here, and then went over to a secure video teleconference room where he spent the majority of his time communicating, discussing with his staff and other agencies back outside of Omaha, and then his decision to return home. All in a period of about 90 minutes.
Okay. What do you see as the competitive edge of military satellites versus high-resolution civilian satellites? I'm surprised at the level of information available in the civilian sector, this person writes.
The question again now?
The question is the competitive edge of military satellites versus high-resolution civilian satellites.
Okay, well, military satellites, you're wanting to discuss capabilities, which I cannot discuss. The high-resolution satellites with regards to the commercial side, that's where we are. That's what's available, in some cases, to the highest bidder. So it's a matter of you're asking about capabilities, which I cannot discuss, with regards to military satellites.
How long will it take to determine the success of the attack on Baghdad last evening?
That is something for the military to determine, and then for other decision-makers to decide. That's too much of a hypothetical there. I could not answer that question. It just depends on what the requirements are to be fulfilled in the direction of the President and the Secretary of Defense. Okay.
Here's another one that may be a toughie. What are your intelligence gathering capabilities? Please be as specific as possible.
I cannot discuss those. Bottom line, that talks about capabilities. I do have, again, on the fact sheet there, information with regards to intelligence and what we do. Okay?
To the extent that you can please identify the kinds of aircraft operating out of STRATCOM and their missions in this war.
There may be a misperception or a misunderstanding with regards to planes out of STRATCOM in itself. There really are no planes out of STRATCOM. Planes belong to different organizations that, under certain circumstances, may report to or respond to direction by higher authority as to how they are going to be employed but they belong to respective organizations out of here. What you have is the 55th Wing, where they have their mission that is there, and those are those aircraft. There are other planes there that have other missions, but they, in fact, belong to other organizations, not directly to STRATCOM in itself.
So to clarify, does the 55th Wing respond to STRATCOM's requests, even though it is the host of STRATCOM at Offutt?
They will respond to their higher authority, the direction given to them up through the 8th Air Force. And wherever that comes from, in fact, is what will direct. That's a very overarching question. I can't get into level specificity because it talks about capabilities with regards to the mission. Okay. Sorry, I can't answer that more specifically.
That's fine. Can you tell us about the intermingling of the various services at STRATCOM? Now, SAC itself is strictly Air Force, I believe.
Not?
Okay. Would you enlighten us on that?
Okay. Many people did not realize that, but in many respects, the Navy has been in Omaha since 1960. Okay. There are organizations within SAC that were established with regards to bring the nuclear organizations, if you will, the other services under a single hat. And there were different organizations internal to that that were multi-service or different service, joint service. And in many respects, the true joint command, if you will, was established there within SAC back in 1960, the JSTPS. And with that came the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and those entities, even the Marine Corps. Yes, we do have Marines at STRATCOM, but that's where that was established. SAC in its original form and shape was something that was created by General LeMay prior to the development of the Air Force, so in many respects that was an Army command when it first started. And if you see the legacy wall that we have, the first commander is an Army general.
Is STRATCOM involved in monitoring space shuttle flights, thinking particularly of the recent space shuttle disaster?
Our responsibilities with regards to shuttle operations is that the commander, Admiral Ellis, is the Department of Defense manager for shuttle operations in support of, through other organizations outside of Offutt, where he has those ties, where in fact applies to Patrick Air Force Base, other locations around the country. Again, our responsibility is to oversee the DOD or Department of Defense portion of those shuttle missions, and that's where we support to that end. What we do, you may have seen in recent reports, but if you'll go to our website, you can get more level of specificity, and that gives me an opportunity. If you look at the bottom of the fact sheet, there is a website there that will give you a whole series of fact sheets and background information that will be supportive to you, and you can call us back for more information. Okay?
Is it true that the administration has asked STRATCOM to work on developing a small nuclear missile that can be used in and against Iraq?
You're talking about capabilities again, and again, we cannot discuss those areas. I'm sorry.
I think you alluded to this a little bit, but perhaps you could enlarge on the topic of this question. Talk about the media access in this war as compared to the media access in the past Gulf War.
Whose question? What do you mean by media access?
Whose question was that?
Media
okay.
Access. What do you mean by media access?
First Gulf War, there wasn't any media access, according to many members of the media. But now, there is an attempt by the military, as I understand it, to provide a lot more media access. I mean, to the war itself.
We did have that attempt before with regards to establishing pools, and they did have access to active duty organizations, and they were there. What we have done is a function of the technological changes. The ability to move information more quickly allows us to, in fact, be able to embed the media there with the military. And by doing so, allows them that level of flexibility, understanding the ground rules that are there, same ground rules basically we use during Desert Shield and Desert Storm, except this case we have individual organizations that are assigned to military units, whereas before we were pooling it because of the technological changes, because of the technology challenges that we had at that time. I have spoken at journalism classes, to talk to universities with regards to these challenges in preparation for those going through J school that are preparing for a career and what they can do for themselves to be ready if, in fact, they get an opportunity to be embedded with the military, with other organizations, a chance to experience this. But I feel personally from my firsthand experience there, having been one of those military public affairs types that were working out of Dairon, where we had 2,000 media, I repeat, 2,000 media to provide as much access to them as was possible at that time with regards to transportation, with regards to communication, to be able to get their stories back, because we did not have the capability then that we have now. It would have required a totally designed vehicle. All sorts of contraptions would be necessary in order to get their product back. We had people that would shoot videotape. The raw videotape would be put in a bag, and then we would end up having runners, if you will, that would, in fact, take that product, and these runners were military personnel, would actually pick up that product and take it back to a site where it could be transferred to another site, transferred to another site, and finally gotten back to Dairon, where the head end was, for the video uplink back to New York, Washington, wherever it needed to go. And again, that was the challenge. The press reports were done on laptops or typewriters, then sent back by hand. Photography, it was film then, it was not digital. Communication by telephone were these bricks that you carried. So that is really the difference as far as access goes. Yes, there was a concern, but at the same time, I also state with regards to the perception of the public relevant to the media as opposed to the military. But the effort here is to provide as much access to the press in this event. And I will tell you that the media that is participating, in fact, is not all U.S. media. It's not all allied media. Al Jazeera is embedded with some U.S. military. Other organizations are as well. So it's an opportunity to provide that kind of information to the viewers and then let you filter it. Okay? Does that help?
I have a question personally about the headquarters at Offutt Air Base. Those of us who have been on the base drive past this mound, and you know that down in there is something. And my wife and I had the opportunity to go down there last spring for the retirement ceremony of our son-in-law. Right. What can you tell us about the facilities there? Do people take their meals there? Are there facilities for overnighting there if you must? And what can you share with us?
As is in the Pentagon with the National Military Command Center, as there are with other unified commands and their command center, the command center is designed there at Offutt at U.S. Strategic Command is a means by which to provide for a high fidelity level of communication, uninterrupted. A means by which to communicate and carry out the direction of the President and the Secretary of Defense. With this design, the media that having been there earlier, you had a chance to go underground and to be able to see the facility, you get a briefing, and you saw how it was oriented there in the underground. So again, it serves in some respects to counter the Nebraska winters, but also it is something that is there to be able to respond to the requirements of the President and the Secretary of Defense as they direct Now, would it take a direct hit from a incoming nuclear ICBM? No. But the fact is that it is there to be able to counter other means of terrorist threats, other approaches that may attempt to affect its capability, but it is there to be able to carry out those requirements. Yes, there's people there 24/7, 365. They are there fulfilling their obligations, carrying out those jobs. Yes, they may be able to receive meals. Yes, they would have responsibilities there throughout that time, but they also have rotational shifts of personnel that come through. It's not you're down there and you stay there forever, but it's a matter of moving in and out by your watch section. And I'm glad you had a chance to go and visit.
Can you give us an idea of the atmosphere inside the headquarters last night when the deadline ran out? For example, can you tell us what Admiral Ellis was doing, if he was in the command center, and just the general atmosphere?
Most of us were carrying out our regular duties, responsibilities, not only for our work, but also for our home. Many of us come and go in the building during different times of the night and day. Those that are on watch, Admiral Ellis' personal schedule, I think, is indicative of, yes, his responsibilities. So he lives there on the base and has access in many different ways. So I was there last night at a certain time until I felt as though that I had my work done, and then I went home. I came back later, covered other areas, other responsibilities, and went home again. Some of those I carried out at home, and it just depends on what the requirements are. So we, for the most part, were doing our responsibilities. I just can't get more specific than that.
To what extent were you depending on commercial media for information?
I always go to commercial media. Granted, there may be some better than others, some worse than others. It just depends upon the reporters themselves, how much time they spend in understanding the topic. Again, it just depends if you can do some media analysis and comparing from one station to the other, what level of understanding they have. Granted, they have talking heads who, in fact, have had some background in understanding what the military is about. But you get a chance to see that. Now, can you get over-inundated? Can you get brain-locked associated with so much information? Certainly. I've had in different speakers' forums, parents, individuals ask questions, how do I handle all this? And very respectfully, I just say, turn off the TV. Take some time for yourself, and if the children have questions, sit down and speak to them. Channel 7, I guess, last night had a piece on where they tried to explain that over in Iowa. Everyone needs to understand that. This is a rich information age that we have, and unless you take the time to understand that information, it will not be as useful to you. So people need to become educated. Reporters do. Military does. We all do together. So that's something that we must continue to strive to become better communicators.
Your thoughts, Captain, on the preponderance, it seems, of retired military top brass being hired as consultants and commentators for the various networks. Do you think this is helpful, or?
Again, it's our individuals that have had a rich history of experience. Again, you have to take it based upon the questions and the knowledge of the organization itself and how they use that knowledge. Again, you're talking about high technology, high levels of technology and changes with regards to that. If they're current in understanding that, yes, that can be of benefit. Can they put it at a level of understanding that the public will understand? That's a challenge they have each and every day. More so that we're living in a soundbite society, being able to put it in a soundbite that others can understand is a challenge for all of us.
Some more pertinent questions regarding STRATCOM per se. Will we, the public, or the media see any changes at STRATCOM during this operation?
No. You probably won't see. You may hear. My effort, our effort, the command's effort, Admiral Ellis's effort is to be able to share as much information as we can. Our public website is there to provide you information. where we can, working with the media, where time provides us that opportunity to do so. We'll work with you to make that information available. But as far as seeing, probably not, because we're all inside the building.
Is Stratcom in charge of the GPS that the smart bombs use to hit targets?
Stratcom has a responsibility associated for their integration and coordination into space as it relates to supporting the joint warfighter. We have an oversight responsibility. We work with the different organizations that have the day-to-day responsibility for those systems. So, yes, we have a chain of command level responsibility in place to coordinate that and understand it. And we must be aware of its utility, how it's used, its operational capabilities, because each and every day, many people don't understand the importance of GPS and what it does, more so every time you go up to an ATM machine, and how important that GPS is to your bank account.
As far as intelligence, is the time-critical imagery, as an example, passed on to the grunts, the troops, or more to the commanders?
Again, because of the high fidelity in technology this day, wherever possible, as much pertinent, current, available information and intelligence that's there is provided to the warfighter. Excuse me, to the warfighter whenever possible.
Talk about the a little more. You alluded to it before somewhat, about what happened when President Bush was brought to Stratcom the night of September 11th in 2001. Is there any other comment?
No others? Nothing else that I can discuss.
Okay. All right. What is the difference from when you were... Now, I'm not sure I understand this. I think this is Gary's question. What is different now from when you were SAC? SAC, yes.
Okay. All right.
Quite a few differences?
Go to the fact sheet. Go to the fact sheet. I've already answered that one. Okay, next question.
Okay. See, Gary, I recognize your writing, and I appreciate it very much. Are there other defense-related functions that could become part of Stratcom in the future?
If there were, it'd be at the direction of the Secretary of Defense and coordination and approval by the President. It is always a possibility, so we will just have to wait and see, and the same thing could apply to OFFIT.
This is strictly a subjective question, I think. What news organization has the best perspective on the military?
Who's not here? That's a very fair question, and I appreciate that very much. Everyone here in this market tries their best. And that's what I ask of you to do, that you take the time to understand the story, that the reporters take the time to do your research. Feel free to call on my office at any time. I have business cards with me. And yes, it does include my home number. Because it's important that if you get the facts right, it makes your job easier, and believe you me, it makes my job a lot easier, too. Are there times that I can't tell you things? Yes. There will be more times that I will be able to share things with you or be able to tell you where you can get that information and use it for yourself. Again, if it's capabilities-based, if we're talking about actual utility of a system, how it's employed, matters pertaining to national security, no, I can't do that. But I will work every way possible to support you in your effort to be able to tell your viewers the right story. Thank you.
There has been longstanding concern that the military facilities at OFFIT would leave with these changes.
Let me say one thing.
Okay.
As well. And I know for as long as you all have been shooting here that one great challenge you're going to have is to determine what sound bites you're going to use tonight relative to what I said. and in what context you're going to use those. So if you have questions relevant to that, please call. Because, yes, I monitor every station, get clips from every paper, and, yes, I do listen to radio as well. So the opportunity there for you to be able to get out that story, that's indicative of me to make sure that I get you the information that you need. So, again, I look forward to seeing your piece tonight.
Okay, this question was, is there a possibility, to your knowledge, that STRATCOM could at some time be assigned to a base other than off an Air Force base?
Again, that would be a decision far above my pay grade.
As you understand, there are many topics that the captain just cannot answer because of security, and I think he's willing to spend some time with the media that is here assembled today. At the conclusion,
before we set this up.
Well, you had alluded to that on the telephone yesterday. That, and so we,
my cell phone, yes.
And so we'll come to the end of this, I think, very timely Omaha Press Club forum. And our sincere thanks to our guest speaker, Captain James C. Taylor, Chief of Public Affairs, U.S. STRATCOM. And our thanks also to KIOS for the radio coverage, and to you folks in our audience. Today's forum is now adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club. Today's guest was United States Navy Captain James C. Taylor, Chief of Public Affairs for U.S. STRATCOM. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Thursday, March 20th, 2003, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Dale Munson for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next forum will be on Thursday, April 17th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a panel discussion on the topic, Downtown Omaha, the Future. The members of the panel will include Bob Peters, Director of the Omaha Planning Department, Barbara Schaefer, Chairman of the Downtown Omaha Business Development Board, and Todd Heistand, co-owner of New Style Development Corporation, which has had a major role in rehabilitating old downtown buildings into apartments and commercial space. If you'd like to attend this or other future forums, call the Omaha Press Club at 345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Now this is your producer and host, Bob Coate, thanking you for listening.